Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Monday edition and kind of a Monday political edition, if all goes according to schedule. Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, has his first formal briefing at the White House with reporters scheduled for 12:30 this afternoon. And the plan is to carry that live as it happens, given the sort of contentious event that happened Saturday when he was before reporters and didn't take questions. So there certainly are questions left to answer. So if he starts on time, we will pick that up around 12:30 or so. In the interim, it's Monday. That means the Inno boys are in the house. Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke, welcome to you both.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having us.
How's it going?
One of you has a Super Bowl smile on his face.
Always. I just, as a Pats fan, I don't even have to take this smile off anymore.
A lot of people want to smack it off your face as a Pats fan. But the Patriots going once again to the Super Bowl. So we're very happy with you. I want to talk about Big Ten. And there's this Big Ten story I read about with you guys with esports. And first of all, my son, you know, he just went back to school over the weekend. But there was a weekend over in December where he didn't leave the basement because he was watching this games competition. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, well, you know, it's just my favorite team is in it. They're playing other games where they watch it on TV. Now, is that what we're talking about here with Big Ten, putting something on the Big Ten network?
That's right. You know, esports, you can sort of write it off because it sounds a little silly, but this is a huge industry that is blowing up. So basically, it is a sort of an industry and a sport around watching other people play video games. And it is a massively growing industry. It's going to be a $1.1 billion industry by 2019.
So there are two things, though, right? You can watch other people play on TV, on your TV. Or you can, or do they actually have stadium events?
Yeah, they have stadium events. I mean, they sell out. They sell out where the Lakers play. I remember that was where they held the League of Champions kind of championship last year. And yeah, I mean, these are in stadium experiences. People go to the stadium, they watch the big screen, and the teams are kind of on the quote unquote court and they're playing, and you're just you're cheering them on, you're watching. And yeah, I'm kind of with you, Steve. I have a kind of like laugh and shrug approach to it, but I think this is really cool that the Big Ten is saying it's here, let's get behind it. So what it's going to be doing is Big Ten schools, 12 of the 14 Big Ten schools, which is kind of a silly sentence, by the way.
I know. I know Penn State's not one of the 12. I couldn't figure out who the other one
is. I think Nebraska's the other
Nebraska,
one. But Northwestern, okay. Illinois, right. You know, the local guys here. So these schools are going to be, you know, filling up rosters of students who will compete against other Big Ten schools in esports.
And Will, I'm not shrugging really anymore. I mean, at first I was, but now I totally get it. And people were saying, well, this isn't a sport. And it's like, well, why not? It's a skill like chess. You know, people will watch chess or they'll watch other things. And I think it's kind of it's a whole new sort of sporting world.
I think it's cool. I mean, listen, the debate of whether it's a sport or not is just kind of a futile exercise. Who cares?
Right.
Do people enjoy it?
Well, they're getting
sure.
scholarships. I mean, yeah. These students are each going to get a $5,000 scholarship for
win or lose.
Yeah. So they're going to be teams of six. So each school have six players and they're all going to have a scholarship that they'll be able to use towards books or tuition or anything.
And so this is going to be on the Big Ten network.
So basically the Big Ten network is picking these games up kind of on their digital properties. So it'll be on BTN to go. And then their other website that cover some Big Ten sports, but then the championship will be broadcast on the Big Ten Network on TV.
I'm wondering because I'm sorry I keep interrupting.
Oh no, I was just going to say in the game they're playing is the League of Legends, not the League of Champions.
Okay.
So I'm showing my inexperience.
Well,
there.
But I'm wondering who's going to tune into the Big Ten Network for this because unless they wouldn't have access elsewhere. I guess that's the point.
Right. Basically, they're bringing some of these games to
an everyone else
for the
is,
very
the,
first time.
The right. men are already in their basement watching the computer, but I guess if it only has access on the BTN.
And it's becoming more organized, right? So now, I mean, you're putting teams and organizations around these schools. So Northwestern is going to have its own dedicated team.
Yeah, there's also a validating element to this all, like Twitch, which is the streaming service where you really engage with these games. That's probably how your son was watching these. Twitch is a platform for streaming games. The engagement on Twitch is insane. People spend an average of anywhere from like 2 to 3 hours on there a day watching. But for to onboard viewers into this, you kind of need something like what the Big Ten's doing. Maybe the Twitch environment would always make them feel uncomfortable and make them feel like it's a basement type thing. But with the Big Ten, with ESPN now has esports writers, it's kind of adding that sense of legitimacy, which is really going to help this skyrocket.
So the way Noah would watch it, because he would refer to his favorite team, and I'm like, if you're just watching the video game screens, how do you develop an affinity for a team? And he said that in the lower corner of the screen, they would show the guys playing the games.
These players are superstars, Steve. Like, they have huge endorsements. They're making millions of dollars. And there's actually a really interesting kind of Illinois story that I believe it's Hinsdale. It is secretly one of these great incubators and creators of gaming talent. There's a house out in a Chicagoland suburb that basically has something like five of the best players in the country. And yeah, there's a big New York Times profile on one of the players in Chicago. Maybe because it's cold and we're inside a lot. I don't know why, but we create a lot of terrific professional video games.
And Robert Morris University was the first college to offer scholarships for esports athletes, too. So now I think something around 25 schools offer scholarships.
I love it. Like, it's here. Why not be really good at it?
I'm totally I'm the old guy in the house, and I totally agree with you. I think it's just a new way. Why not? I mean,
if you're gonna go
watch, you know, college wrestling or go to a movie, why not watch a
video? Watching people play games is just step one. I mean, Twitch is being used for all kinds of different sort of use cases. People are watching people eat food, and I saw an article in Bloomberg a few months ago how that's becoming like the skyrocketing thing to watch.
Okay,
people
now
do.
We're late here, but you have got to sort that out a little bit for me. what are you talking about?
Yeah, so Twitch is being used as an online community to watch people sort of eat food.
Strangers?
Yes. Yeah, you pop on and just see what people are eating. It sounds super bizarre.
Oh,
but
not
like
at all.
I was saying, the engagement is through the roof. People are like really interested in it. So there's going to be these weird sort of small niches pop up where people are consuming content where other people
are
doing.
The internet's crazy. Like the unboxing craze, how there's this huge community of people who just watch people like unwrap stuff.
Okay, both of you, just stop right there.
That happens.
Because we have to revisit this. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll come back. And then we're going to watch Will Flanagan eat his words.
Done. It'll be really, really watched.
Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Jim Dahlke and Will Flanagan are in the studio from Chicago Inno, and I never know what they're going to bring. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about, but I want to get to this again. You said, Jim, that more and more people now are sort of being entertained by watching other people eat, right?
Exactly.
And then, Will, you said there's a real box-opening sort of craze.
Oh, yeah. Unboxing is... What's amazing is it's not a new craze. It's now been going on for a number of years, and it's basically it is a community of people and videos that watch the unwrapping of toys and gifts and devices, and not like, here's a Christmas present, ooh, what's in it? It's here's the iPhone 7.
I bought a toaster oven out of the box. I got a toaster oven last month, and so I wanted to look up a video about what you could do with the toaster oven, and what I came upon was this guy, and it was very anticlimactic to me because I thought he'd get it out of the box and then tell me about it, but the whole video was him taking it out of the box and explaining what was in there, and here's the styrofoam and all of that. That's what we're talking about?
That's exactly what we're talking about. So last year, Steve, people watched videos unveiling items like toys, sneakers, and iPhones more than 1.1 billion times for a total of 60 million hours. What's fascinating about this unboxing is, yes, it's adults and people watching it too, but there's a phenomenon of toddlers and babies watching unboxing and really connecting with it. And the New York Times did a story on it trying to really get into the psychology behind it. And there's something about, one, it's extremely low stakes, it's soothing, and it's just exciting and revealing enough for someone who's still processing what excitement is.
Right, right.
So
here's
a toy, I'm taking the toy, here's the arm moving for the first time. It's fascinating. It's one of those things that's probably, from a psychology standpoint, existed forever. I'm sure people would have loved to watch this, but never had the ability. And the internet, like it has done so many things, has just made it massively popular.
Okay, eating. People eating in restaurants or eating at their table?
You can imagine it just at home. So it's not at a restaurant. So this is like somebody made like a really killer roast beef sandwich, and it's just other people online sort of enjoying that experience of someone else eating food.
Okay. Well, those are a couple of things to watch for. Really, I did not have any idea, and I've kind of experienced it with the toaster oven, so there's that. What if I don't want to be in a world with you guys and want to walk down the street with glasses that will keep me from being recognized?
They're here. That's a great. So we did a story last week on this pair of anti-surveillance glasses that were made by a Chicago maker. They're called the Reflectacles Ghost Project. So there are roughly 27,000 private and government-owned surveillance cameras in Chicago.
Right. We talk about that a lot, right?
We talk about that a lot, and there's a tremendous amount in what these glasses are. So they're made by a maker who had made reflective glasses for bikers that light up, and think about, you know, you're biking in the dark and you just see lighted glasses.
Right.
What these do is they're made with an infrared material that reflect back on security cameras. So if you're wearing these glasses and a security camera captures you, your face is distorted. It's not a fix-all to all surveillance, but, you know, if you're worried about that, it will.
Check it out. It's at Chicago Inno. We're going to fly to make room, hopefully, for this White House briefing. Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke, always great to talk to you. Thanks a lot. I'm going to go live stream myself eating lunch a little bit later.
There, done.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here, and I know that you in the newsroom, you're standing by waiting for this White House press conference or press briefing from Sean Spicer. So, just
we're expecting it pretty soon, Steve. We did get a 2-minute warning, but now they've, you know, on TV they've gone to a commercial, so we'll wait and see what happens.
So,
I thought they were going to go to it because the 2-minute warning was a little bit over a minute ago, but
right, well,
it's coming very shortly.
I'm going to do my best to get into all of this without making cracks about counterfacts or fake facts or all of that. So. We look forward to hearing when we do. And our loss is our gain, really. Randy Schaefer is here from the Chicago Tribune. She writes about social media, but mostly she's known for being bumped from the Business Lunch lately. Welcome back.
You guys have been busy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it seems like every time we're about to have you on that something happens one way or another. I think last week was the Cubs celebration at the White House or
something like that, yeah.
Okay, so President Trump is known for his tweets, and that gets him into trouble or gets him great followers. He's now at POTUS, but he did a little something new on Inauguration Day, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he is actually now on Snapchat as well. So he's reaching out to, you know, Snapchat tends to have a younger user base, so he can connect with his audiences over there as well now.
And he did a couple from the limousine ride to the Capitol?
He did, actually, and this is kind of interesting. Much like his two Twitter handles, he also has two Snapchat handles. As we know, he now has POTUS in addition to Real Donald Trump on Twitter, and now on Snapchat he has White House, which was Barack Obama's old handle,
right,
and Real Donald Trump, which is the new handle.
Have we noticed a difference in the way he's tweeting or snapping? I mean, is one address a little more authentic than the other?
To be honest, I haven't really looked too much into them over the course of the weekend. I had the weekend off and spent it doing things that weren't social media.
How was the weather Saturday? Was it nice?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
Oh, you mean you unplugged from social media?
Sometimes I do, yes.
That's interesting because one of the things we were going to talk about was this Tim Ferriss who wrote The 4-Hour Workday. And he really, I was reading that article, Randy, and I'm like, I should just turn off my phone for a while. And then I came up with all these reasons why I shouldn't, which really none of them are valid. But he says we're kind of making ourselves miserable by being so involved in social media.
Yeah, and that's something that could definitely be argued is social media is kind of jet fuel for reactivity. And everyone needs a break every now and again. You know, maybe this election has been kind of overwhelming, or maybe your friends are all on vacation and you're stuck in the beautiful 60-degree windy city this past weekend. But every so often, people could kind of use a break sometimes.
You said reactivity, which is a significant word. What does that mean?
Well, I guess for me personally, you know, I'm in my late 20s. All my friends are getting engaged, buying houses, all this stuff. And not necessarily me in general, but somebody kind of similar to me might see all of that and react a certain way and kind of start feeling down about themselves. And sometimes unplugging is just what you need.
You know, and again, it's not something I'd ever considered. But if you're completely being, and I'll use the word bombarded, but I don't mean it in a bad sense. But if you are facing this continual sort of input of other people doing things, you are reactive to them. You're reacting, you're using up sort of energy reacting to all of these things that you wouldn't do normally.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes it's so hard to remember that social media is very carefully curated. Nobody posts the bad side about their divorce on Facebook, but you're not going to see that. So you kind of see all these positive things, and sometimes it can kind of make you feel negative about your life in general.
Right. And so, and yeah, and for me, it's just using up the brain cell of seeing what that next tweet was or the next chirp from the Wall Street Journal or whatever. I'm reacting to all of those things. If I didn't have that in my hand,
for a couple of hours a day, I would not have those reactive hours. And Tim Ferriss says I'd be better off.
Your emotions would be a heck of a lot different.
Maybe not better. My emotions are a wreck, Randy. Randy Schaefer is here. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. And we're kind of waiting for this White House press briefing to begin with Sean Spicer. Kim Gordon is watching that. Okay, so the president is Snapchatting. You know, you took Saturday off, and so you didn't have to cover the big march. But there's another story that you pulled from the, was it from Chicago Business, from Tribune, about how mainstream media, again, missed the significance of this march. Now, I'm going to make the case or explain for me what they're saying, and I think I might disagree with this a little bit.
Well, I think we might have the same kind of opinion on that. I don't think that mainstream media missed the march so much as when an event is culled together on social media, sometimes it's hard to keep up with it. And so a lot of the mainstream media outlets didn't put together a lot of kind of preview stories leading up to the event because it was so here and there, scattered on Facebook events and scattered on Instagram hashtags, that a lot of mainstream media outlets didn't pick it up and run with it as a typical event preview.
Right. And so, I mean, I had one of the organizers, one of the key organizers on Friday, and she was still at the time saying 65,000.
Right. She said
the weather might lead it to be more, but I don't know if she was predicting.
Which definitely, the weather did help a little bit.
Right. How many, do you remember, do you know what the final number in Chicago was, the estimate?
The crowd estimate was 250,000 according to event organizers, but city officials would not comment.
Right. Okay. So either way, it was sort of, but I guess the crux of it, I mean, one of the sort of story molds right now is how the mainstream media got this wrong or got that wrong. So, okay, there's that. You can argue that if you want or dispute that. But one thing is sort of indisputable is how this social network fabric can mobilize people when people are inclined to be mobilized, and it certainly worked on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely, yes. I know that I saw a few tweets that were saying, why aren't there news choppers out here? There's tons of people, 100,000 people gathered, and soon enough, CNN had posted, I retweeted a photo, an aerial image of everyone in Chicago, and, you know, news outlets can mobilize pretty quickly on the ground for things like
right.
this, but it definitely was, the organization was a little overlooked just because Facebook is still not very traditional when it comes to event planning.
And so do you think that the organizers or the people who have other causes can look at how this worked and duplicated in some other way?
Oh, absolutely. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if these event organizers started putting together websites or books or anything like this. This was a huge event, and the fact that it was entirely coordinated over social media is groundbreaking in a sense.
Yeah, it was a remarkable thing to watch, and I was home by myself, my wife, and took my son back to school, so it was just me and little projects around the house, and I'm just watching these crowds grow and, you know, having talked to people. You know, when I heard 250,000 people in Chicago, I just couldn't believe it.
Oh, absolutely. I personally didn't go to the march. I had friends there, and they were sending me photos and texts, and everything was jamming because there was no cellular connectivity because the crowds were that large.
And it was joyful. I mean, it was a happy crowd.
So I heard.
Is that right? They went there because they're all ticked off in many ways, but it was a sort of a joyful protest.
It was a rally, so rallying together.
All right. Super Bowl parties are coming up. Patriots and the Atlanta Braves. No, that's not right. The Atlanta Falcons.
Falcons, yes.
Sometimes I do that just to see. And there's a story about the fact that social media has an impact as well on how we're watching the game, which I get that, but that it might actually lead to smaller Super Bowl parties. What can that be about?
Yeah, well, the concept is that as people kind of get more and more connected digitally, they're less connected in real life, and you have no need to pull together, you know, 50 of your closest friends in one room if you can group chat them all or Snapchat them all on your phone.
So the people who are saying, well, I don't need to go to a party now because I can tweet with people, is that, I think that's an excuse for people who don't get invited anywhere.
I think it's an excuse for people who don't get invited anywhere, people that just want to sit home in their pajamas, or maybe somebody doesn't want to contribute to making the 7-layer dip, you know,
right.
Now they've got an excuse.
But they always lose in the chili contest, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Okay, but so the other part of that is that everyone's going to be on social media. Everyone's going to be looking for something to do at halftime. So this is a case where other businesses, to build their brand, need to be really active.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not sure if you remember the Oreos, You Can Still Dunk in the Dark campaign that happened when the lights went off at the Super Bowl after the Beyonce halftime. I forget who was playing, but I do remember Beyonce.
And so be out there and do what you can to further your brand, because people are going to be tweeting. They're going to be tweeting about the commercials.
Oh, yeah.
But even if you don't shell out the money for a commercial, there's a way to capitalize on it on social media.
Right, and free advertising for you there.
All right, so you're picking the Patriots? Is that what you said?
Not the Patriots.
You're picking the Falcons?
I pick any team but the Patriots.
I'm kind of the same way. Now that Will Flanagan's out of the room, I'm tired of seeing the Patriots win.